welcome to Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club. I'm your host, Todd Beardsley, and I'm here with...
Claire Reynolds.
Hey, Claire. Yes, we're recording this semi-live. I have a fancy new soundboard, and we're doing this in the cool air of... Not technically Big Bend. Where are we, Claire?
We're in the Big Bend area, for sure.
Yeah.
Right outside of Terlingua.
Terlingua, that's
between
it.
Terlingua and Big Bend National Park.
Cool air. So we just listened to this at the campfire. It was delightful. I was worried that we wouldn't have much to talk about. But apparently, Claire, you have lots of thoughts on that, which we will get to in just a minute.
After a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, so we not a sponsor necessarily, because all I want to do is still sell stamps and underwear. But that hasn't happened yet. So in the meantime, I'll go for DMs on Twitter, which I got one from the last one. And this is
from, it Sean Patrick?
It's not Sean Patrick again. No. This is
hi, Sean Patrick.
I know. Yes, Sean Patrick, thanks. Hi for listening. But unfortunately, now you're not the only person who has written in. We also have a message from Jake. Oh. And Jake says, love the podcast, love the geography info, read a lot of Lovecraft years ago, but I'm rereading and listening to the discussion apps. I enjoy y'all's perspectives and look forward to more. I don't listen to the readings, and that's fine. But
it's okay, Jake, neither do I.
Yeah, generally no, except today was an exception. So Jake doesn't listen to the readings, but he also doesn't see a problem with splitting the story up in the readings. Of reading like one part and then talking about one part and then reading the next part and talking about the next part. And so that's a good idea. Like I may end up doing that on some of the longer stuff. I think I'm going to stick with shorter stuff for at least the next couple until we get back into like a more reasonable release schedule. Because this like maybe release something every 6 weeks is not working out so well, but I don't know. We'll see. All I care about, and I've told you this before, Claire, all I care about is building out a reasonable corpus for Necronomicon of 2021. So I just want to be a famous enough Lovecraft podcaster by like April to be able to throw some weight around it at Necronomicon in Providence. So
that's, okay. Because you had to be a big shot.
That's the entire purpose of this podcast. So, yeah,
to keep maybe listening. Get a free drink,
and that would be fantastic. So, cool air. I mean, I have a couple thoughts on this, but do you want to do the recap? We haven't had you do the recap before. By the way, we're on better equipment too. So, I won't talk about that. So, do you want to do the recap?
You're much more professional than I am. Like my recap would be very much.
My recap, I listened to the last one. My recap is all over the place.
And then this thing happened, and then this.
Well, this is a story I don't think the narrator has a name in this one, again. Am I wrong on that?
I don't think he has a name.
Like, Mrs. Munoz, or Dr. Munoz has the name. He's kind of the main character.
Yeah.
Mrs. Herrero is one. By the way, if you did listen to the reading, you'll notice I didn't lean in too hard on Mrs. Herrero's accent, even though it is written phonetically. It's spelled
easy. And I say props to you. I would have gone in 100%.
Yeah, I did. You know, I took at like the first sentence and it really read Speedy Gonzalez.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, here's. A good question is like, why in my head is it okay to do a Spanish as in Spain accent, but I would not do Spanish as in Mexican or Central American accent?
Yeah. And well, and that
I mean,
was,
Spain,
that was another thing,
colonizers.
Right? Like both of these. Sure.
Like, I mean, yeah. I say it as yeah. a fellow colonizer. Yeah.
So, I mean, both of these characters, Dr. Munoz and Mrs. Herrero, both do hail from Spain. At least that's strongly implied in the text.
He calls them Spaniards.
He calls them Spaniards.
But who knows?
That's true.
He probably didn't ask.
Unlikely. Dr. Munoz talks about time in Castile or something, though. So, like,
he does say something about Barcelona.
So, he's definitely from Spain. Mrs. Herrera, who knows? Like, maybe she's
yeah
from Guatemala or something. I don't know. But not that Lovecraft could be bothered to learn.
She's mostly a little above the coarsest and crudest grade.
Okay, so...
What an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, newsflash.
Lovecraft's an asshole.
Lovecraft is a bit of a racist. And by a bit, I mean very. There are a few words spent describing, like, the relative breeding between, like, here's the thing. I feel like Mrs. Herrera serves as a foil to Dr. Munoz. It's like, oh, we have a low Spaniard and a high Spaniard, right. And those yeah. are the differences here.
Which, and to be fair, I don't need to be fair. He's definitely racist, but it's also classist. Like, when you listen to his other things, say somebody's American, he's described poorer people as being lower class, you know.
Sure.
He's racist and classist is what I'm saying.
Right. It's a twofer. Yeah. So, okay. So anyway, I think I immediately abandoned the story to talk about racism and Spaniards and possibly not Spaniards. So
I'm going to jump in.
Okay.
I'm going to jump in and say the reason why I had something to talk about from the very first line. Mm-hmm. You ask me to explain why I am afraid of a draft of cool air, why I shiver more than others upon entering a cold room and seem nauseated and repelled when the chill of evening creeps. Nobody has, in the history of the world, has ever asked anyone why they are afraid of a draft of cool air. Like, he very much makes me think of, like, a freshman in college uh-huh. who's, like, meeting, like, this is who he's it's trying this thing on to be different. Of, like, oh, God, oh, ooh, 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 it's cold in here. Oh, I'm terrified. I can't go in this room. It's like, no. All right, Howard.
I agree.
Are you wanting me to ask you what's going on?
Oh, when anyone asks me. I can't
People
even tell you.
Constantly asking me why. Okay. Why don't you tell us then? Why don't you?
All right. So the narrator is looking for attention here. And we don't even know who he's talking to. So this is clearly right. one of those, like, stories in a bar. Very similar to Pickman's model. Right.
Yeah.
Where yes. he's just telling the story.
I don't get the feeling that he's
probably
talking to
unasked.
The cops. Not to the cops, but definitely, like, he came in and bought, you know, around for the guy next to him, and then feels now this guy feels obligated to listen to me talk.
Wow, what's up with the cold? What's up with your problem with the cold with air conditioning?
It's just a draft of cool air, though.
Right?
It's not very cold. Yeah.
And then he just, like, totally loses his shit.
Ooh, I'm so scared. So anyway, that was the first thing I thought of.
So he opens with this of, like, oh, I'm so scared of cool air, and you're not going to ever believe why. Here, let me tell you.
This one crazy trick.
So he recounts his time living in New York in the, I think it's East 14th Street.
Wrong again.
West 14th Street.
Oh, it's West 14th Street. Okay, well, mm-hmm. that blows away one of my theories.
Yes, it disgusted him much less than the others he had sampled.
Yeah.
That sounds like New York.
So 14th Street is it's in Manhattan, which is I'm gonna digress a little bit here because, you know, I'm all about the geography of these stories. And so 14th Street runs from on the east side from Gramercy Park through to exactly right. So, like, yeah, Claire and I have a thing about Gramercy Park. I think it'd be the name of a great rom-com movie about people who meet in Gramercy Park. I don't know why. It came to me in a dream one day.
Intro music is obviously to the trailer is Salisbury Hill.
Yeah, Salisbury
dun, dun,
Hill.
Dun, 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 dun,
right.
dun,
Gramercy Park. Anything could happen. But anyway, so 14th Street borders Gramercy Park, but it runs, you know, clear across the island there, and then dumps out. I get, and so if he's on West 14th Street, then that would put him closer to the Hudson River, but still, like, you know, pretty far south, like downtown Manhattan. Very unlike where Lovecraft lived. Lovecraft did live in New York. He lived in Brooklyn, though, and he lived there for 2 years. No, let me back up. He lived there. I'm doing this all without notes. He lived there for 1 year during the first year of his marriage to, I believe her name was Sonia Green. I am looking this up real quick. What is her name? Sonia Green. Yes. She and he both lived in Brooklyn, near, in Flatbush. So like the now most celebrity filled part of Brooklyn. But the description that he gives is very Brooklyn-y, like very cosmopolitan and stuff. But like the geography, he says, on this 14th Street, that's kind of like just north of the financial district. So I don't think it would be like a lot of, you know, immigrant kids, you know, opening up fire hydrants and, you know, playing in the street, you know, kind of scene that you would see in Brooklyn, at least at the time. So put that in the goof section, I guess, for Lovecraft. I don't know why he picked 14th Street, other than that 14th Street is a fairly major artery. Like much of it today is bus only. And the ambient music I used was actual recordings from Lower Manhattan to evoke. It's a little bit more modern. You hear horns that you probably wouldn't have heard in the 20s. But anyway, it ended up being like good traffic noise, I guess.
I'll bet he had a specific house. I mean, he's a writer, right? You go out, look around for things, you know.
But he lived in a house similar to what he describes in this, but okay. That house is in Brooklyn, okay. Which is things he's done before, right? Like he'll transplant houses around Providence, even like in some of the other stories. But this is, I think, the only story. There may be one other. Write in and tell me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the only story that takes place in New York for him over the, and this is, again, like this is during a time where he wasn't terribly happy. Lovecraft famously hated New York. He hated the immigrants specifically. He hated being surrounded by immigrants. He used a lot of, you know, nasty words to describe them and left as soon as he could. Like his wife basically ended up moving to Cincinnati for work because she was a publisher, and he said, F this, I'm out of here, and he moved back to Providence. So he was only there for about a year. So yeah, and that's the thing we get out of that for me, at least. Like that's one of the reasons to talk about Cool Air is the New York connection there of the time that Lovecraft spent there. But you look like you have something to say.
Mm-mm.
No? Okay, well then we'll just keep moving on. So the other reason why I picked this is that, well, at the time, it was October. We're a little bit late on recording this. I like that it took place in October. And then the third reason why I picked this story is there is a card in Arkham, the living card game that we play a lot. And it comes up a lot, actually. It's in a lot of the scenarios in both the opening campaign and in Return to Dunwich. And it is, what's it called? Like Deadly Chill or something like that, right?
Crypt Chill?
Crypt Chill. Yes. Crypt Chill. I want to say that's the name of the card. but it's in the same deck that has like the creepy fog and things. And I believe that it comes up because of the story, because it is, you know, it's about a guy who's very afraid of being cold. and then when things like start not working out for him, it's like a lot of like mad dash to, you know, amateur mechanical engineering and trying to find a piston at the right time. And like, it felt very like role play gamey to me. It's like you're up against a clock of this increasing temperature and you have to fix the problem. Also like kind of real life too. Like if you work as an engineer, like this is a very familiar problem of, you know, things are falling apart and you need a part that you have to go cross town to get and come back. So that to me, like that's the scariest part of this story is the breakdown of the mechanism that keeps the room cold.
Mm-hmm.
That resonates for me.
And I feel like I'm always making fun of Lovecraft.
You're allowed to make fun of Lovecraft.
Thank you. I very much enjoy this stuff. So,
nominally, but, I would like this to be a comedy podcast.
Okay, so 100%. And I heard you giggling at the same time I was giggling when we listened to this tonight. It was like, I'm not alone in thinking that he's sitting there with a thesaurus in front of him and it's like, psh, 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 psh. No. Psh, psh. Yes. Okay. Psh. I mean, constant thesaurusing.
He does that.
To the point of egregiousness.
It's not easy to read. I'll tell you that.
Did people write that way back then? I mean, they kind of did. They wrote very, I don't want to say pretentiously, because that's how it comes off in my interpretation through my modern eyes.
Lovecraft uses a lot of purple prose. And I think it's kind of a hallmark of his style, but like he is an exemplar of the things that were getting published in Weird Tales and, you know, the fantasy magazines at the time. So like, I don't think he was particularly unusual for his time, but like his stuff is the stuff that survives. And so it feels weird because he's the only example that like anybody who is familiar with the genre.
I'm becoming like super more interested. I mean, so then when in here does Hemingway come along and like.
And tighten everything up?
Just fucking change. Like, nope, nope. You guys look like assholes now. that's interesting to me. Because, I mean, there's a ton of superfluous.
I mean, I think if you read like Dickens or Victor Hugo or stuff like that, like you'll find like it's more condensed because these are short stories rather than their stuff. But like with Dickens, especially, like you'll find needless adjectives constantly. Recap of the story, since we've so far avoided doing that.
Nothing has happened. Yeah. Well, because nothing does happen. Okay. You want me to recap the story?
I do.
Okay. I'll recap the story.
Okay. So you do the short version. I'll do a little bit longer and then we'll wrap this up.
Dude, finds a not terrible boarding house in Manhattan.
Yeah. It's filled with Spaniards, though.
Filled with Spaniards. That's all right. It's fucking paella out the wazoo.
There's probably a taco truck right outside, which sounds awesome.
I know. Yeah. On every corner. Paella stand on every corner. And he gets like this. There's somebody who lives above him where there's something weird going on, like ammonia drips down.
Yeah, gross.
His landlady with a funny accent handles it. Then he has a heart attack. Possibly a heart attack?
He has a heart attack.
Probably not a heart attack, but I'll bet it was indigestion.
It's probably gas.
Yeah. From some undercooked paella. Mm-hmm. No. And he, for whatever reason, decides to run upstairs because this guy who lives above him, he is heard.
He's heard as a doctor.
As a doctor. He's never actually met him before.
Right. Closest doctor you can find, which to me telegraphs heart attack. Like, oh, I am in a major problem right now.
I shouldn't.
And it's not like telephones are super common.
Yeah. So he runs upstairs, door opens. It's this, you know, high class looking Spaniard doctor guy.
He's dressed very nicely.
Yes, dressed very nicely. He handles, you know, gives him some medicine. It's very cold in his room. Also very nicely dressed. Yeah. It's not like freezing,
right?
But it's chilly.
Oh yeah. Like, especially in, you know, at the end of, you know, beginning of October or so, like it's pretty warm out.
But the guy is has great, bedside manner and is like explaining to him about what he's doing and talking about medicine and yada, yada. So kind of definitely
peaks. There's no greater foe of death. Than Dr. Moon.
Right. Yeah. I hate death.
death really, it really chaps his
not on my watch. Right. Don't die on me. And so anyway, he kind of becomes friendly with him. And then he wants to like take care of him and like get him all the things he needs and is noticing like, okay, it gets colder and colder in here. It also smells weird. This air conditioning unit needs to keep pumping going, what is, you know, but he doesn't really ever seem super curious about it, mm-hmm. which there was definitely at one point where I was like, okay, I see where this is going, obviously. And I'm thinking,
yeah, you did. You said that out loud, yeah. like about halfway through. Did you see where it was going?
Yeah. I assumed zombie.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course I have the bet. I mean, I don't mean to make it seem like, oh, Lovecraft, you're so hackneyed and cliche, you know.
No, he's from which all the cliches come.
Yes, exactly. It's like that, yeah. But yeah, it's like, okay, why would it need to be so cold and it be, and then the incense. Oh, you're super into Egyptian incense. Well, yeah. I wonder why that, you know. So.
So I wasn't sure about that the first time I, you know, the first time I read it through, like, years and years ago, you know, I figured the incense was... I didn't figure the incense to be like a covering the smell of rot kind of thing, because you've got ammonia already. Like everything smells like ammonia in that goddamn apartment. So it's pretty bad as it is. You know, I figured it was like he was just trying basically anything, because there's a line in there about how he, Dr. Munoz is the he. Dr. Munoz like doesn't discount like the medieval literature on medicine. Which I find hilarious because I'm currently enamored of a very medieval themed video game where there's a lot of like medical side trips in there. It's Crusader Kings 3. It's awesome. You should play it. and like your physician shows up with something foul smelling to rub on your wounds like all the time. And so I figured maybe that was what the Egyptian incense was about, but now that, it is to cover the smell of his own rot, you know, cause like. And there's a couple mentions of like how Dr. Munoz's voice sounds like, how it sounds hollow and it's without timbre and all this other stuff. And so like, so I think that he just talks like all the time and he never.
Well, yeah, breathes. I mean,
because he doesn't breathe, right?
And stuff is rotting.
And things are kind of falling apart inside. But anyway, so he has the heart attack. He gets treated. It's cold. You figure zombie. Things happen. I think the big.
So he's not necessarily a zombie. I mean, not a zombie in the sense that, like, he has no brain.
You know, but, I got to eat human brains.
I mean, the whole thing, like, this should be part one. I need to know more about Munoz.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to see.
Where's the rest of the story?
and so this story is the kind of thing I would expect to come from Fantasy Flight. Through Arkham Horror. Like,
yeah.
It would be like, I can totally see a prequel kind of like, let's follow Dr. Munoz, the guy, or Dr. Torres, who is Dr. Munoz's mentor.
Okay.
He mentioned, like, Dr. Torres found out why this happened and all that stuff. But anyway, he learned all this stuff from Dr. Torres.
Okay.
Like, I can totally see a one shot adventure. From Fantasy Flight in Arkham Horror,
where you
go to Barcelona. This guy is discovering it for the first time. You meet Munoz as he's dying, and you got to get him there and do the whole thing. That would be super fun, right?
Yeah, I want to know what. Yeah, where did this come from?
And that's the whole that.
How old is he? What? That's what I want to know. How old is he? What was his life like before he became
a
zombie doctor? He's not a zombie doctor. He's a doctor zombie.
Yeah. Please.
Why? Like, what, who, you know, obviously there's some reason he was trying, like, of course, in my head, I'm like, okay, there was a woman. He was in love with her. He was like, the only way I can save her.
No, that's dumb. I don't like that at all.
He's a sweetheart, though.
He is nice.
He's
just obsessed with defeating death, and I think that's his thing.
That's because love's the only thing that makes you defeat death.
No.
You don't love anyone. Who the fuck cares if you die?
Wow.
Sorry, I guess
I feel like I'm putting... suddenly became like an interrogation on our relationship.
I know you love me, so I'm not worried about it.
This is a very Jeffrey Combs
listener,
kind of from beyond.
If you're not aware, we are a couple.
All right. So, Fantasy Flight, please make this adventure. If it doesn't exist already, I don't know. I only own about half, I think. Maybe a touch more than half. Maybe 55% of all of Arkham Horror. There's a lot to go. That is an interesting story, but you're right. Like, it, I don't know. Like, I feel like the story is a good, like, in media res thing. You could make a whole franchise about it, right? Yeah. Like,
well, it's a good story in the sense that it leaves me wanting a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel let down by the story. I feel like, and, and go on. I want to know more.
I feel like in a sci-fi sense, it's interesting to me that it's kind of cryogenics, except it's cryogenics, but you still get to walk around.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So you're not a frosted flake, you know, you're not just a head in a jar waiting around for a cure. Mm-hmm. You get to be cured. Also, you have to be cold all the time. And if you're ever, and if you ever hit 70 degrees, like you're in super bad shape.
Well, another thing too, is I feel like in his other stories, the subject, not the narrator, but the subject, you know, the people who have the creepy things going on with them, all are to blame somehow. You know what I mean? Like they are clearly flawed. Mm. I mean, I don't want to say they're evil, but they've brought it upon themselves somehow.
I would say I think you're right. The subjects of Lovecraft stories are subjects. They're not protagonists. They're not heroes.
Right. They're mean and creepy.
Things are happening to them.
They might have originally been friends with the narrator, but then they got creepy and weird.
Yeah.
But this guy is different. He was already this way, and he's been, as far as we can tell, nothing but
pretty nice.
I mean, he's helping him, and you know.
I mean, he too is a little classist, or.
Right.
Or the narrator is projecting classism onto him because, like, when they first meet, he's like, oh, another gentleman of another learned man of letters that I can talk to because I haven't had that in a while.
Of course, Lovecraft would say that somebody's, oh, you know. He was so glad was there.
Well, hey, we did kind of drop the recap there. So he meets the guy. It turns out he's a zombie. Not really. He's just been preserved through this cold technique.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's dead, and that's the thing. Like, that's the big reveal at the end, is that he's not only dead, but he has been dead for a long time.
Don't know how long.
For 18 years.
Oh, he said 18 years. Yes.
18 years at the end. And we only know this because his air conditioner broke down and the protagonist couldn't fix it in time.
Believe you me, as somebody who lives in Austin, Texas, I get it.
Cool air. Yes, please.
When our air conditioner starts to go out, I am like pounding that phone. Like, get over
That's
here.
That's the panic.
I got a dead husband I need to preserve.
Obviously, we need a gasoline-powered ammonia circulation machine.
With
in
a piston,
every room.
We need a piston, whatever it is. He's like, I gotta find a piston.
And that's the thing, like, this dude is burning gasoline in, like, a third floor apartment.
Yeah, I feel like ammonia wouldn't be the number one smell, although, I mean, it's pretty strong,
And who knows, like, how this mechanism actually is supposed to work.
Yeah. But, anyway.
I like the mechanical parts of it, but yeah, like the mad dash as the climax for parts, basically.
That was fun. Hilarious. That was fun.
Yeah, they got a yakety sax all over. Yeah. And even like he yakety saxes it with Esteban, which is Mrs. Herrera's son. It's like, listen, I have to buy. I know that he's like, either you got to get the piston or the ice. I will do either one. You could do either. And the Esteban's like, I am out, sir. I am no.
I do not know your, no. I am not a part of this.
Yep. So, anyway.
And good on you, Esteban. I get it.
Yeah, Esteban ducks out immediately.
Like, I gotta go.
These spies aren't going to sell themselves.
No.
Well, with that, I think we should wrap it up. Is there any other final words you have here, Claire? Because it's kind of cold out.
No, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
I liked it, too. I like it fine. Like, I don't think it's particularly scary. I think this is more science fiction-y than horror, really, more than anything.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the guy's a corpse, but, you know, that's the horror part.
But he was
part.
A corpse before we met him. So that's
he's
a little different.
He's been a corpse for years and years and years.
Yeah, he's an adult. His corpse is an adult.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
His corpse can join the army. Can't vote yet. Wait, no, you can vote when you're 18. Yeah.
You can vote.
Can't drink.
Can't drink. Can't rent a car.
Right. Could fight for his country, though.
You know, and here's the thing, too. The one thing, you know, as we are sitting here in the post-election 2020 era, just, you know, we have to think about politics all the time now, apparently. And, like, I really do enjoy, like, the scenery of, like, a very vibrant, immigrant-filled New York, because that's what makes, you know, America great. And I don't, I have a problem, of course, with Lovecraft's, you know, racism and anti-immigrant stuff and all that, you know. But I think that his treatment of it is like the relief, right? Like you can see from his treatment that this was the way America worked. Like if you wanted to immigrate to America, you showed up and started building ammonia gasoline powered engines, and that was it. Like that's all you had to do. You know,
and, just in case.
Yeah.
There was a living corpse with money.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I don't understand how we got away. I guess I kind of understand a little bit, but not for this podcast. How we got away from like this Ellis Island model of immigration. You know, I think that is one of the greatest things about historical America that we just don't see today. So,
well,
you know, Dr. Munoz, sorry.
But
you know,
of course, back then, I mean,
you would need an H-1B visa now.
Not saying it is ever okay, but there has always been xenophobia and people are always blaming
sure.
it on the immigrants.
Which is a good point, too. Like, this is written, you know, almost 100 years ago and we're still talking about the same things today. So yeah. That's, I don't know. I guess on one hand, depressing, on the other hand, comforting that like none of this is new. There's nothing new under the sun, right? So
that's just depressing.
It's still just depressing. Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll cut that part out. But anyway, that's it.
On the boats and on the planes that come into America.
All right, keep going.
Never looking back again.
Well, this has been Pod Sothoth, Lovecraft Book Club. Me and Claire talk about Lovecraft and things and stuff. Sometimes sing Neil Diamond songs.
That was fun.